When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I'd pay for vacations with whatever was in my wallet, but I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Welcome to the I Can't Sleep podcast with Benjamin Boster. If you're tired of sleepless nights, you'll love the I Can't Sleep podcast. I help quiet your mind by reading random articles from across the web to bore you to sleep with my soothing voice. Each episode provides enough interesting content to hold your attention, and then your mind lets you drift off. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. That's I Can't Sleep with Benjamin Boster.
Love this podcast because it crushes your dreams of getting rich quick.
They actually got me into reading stats for anything.
You're tuned in to the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Led by Andrew Sather and Dave Ahern.
Step-by-step premium investing guidance for beginners.
Your path to financial freedom starts now.
Starts now.
All right, folks, welcome to Investing for Beginners podcast. Tonight we have our favorite friend from the Great White North, Braden Dennis, to join us today. Braden, for those of you unfamiliar with him, the two or three of you out there, he runs Stratosphere.io, one of my favorite, actually my favorite, investing platform, as well as the Canadian Investor Podcast, which has become my favorite show that I listen to every week. I've been driving across the country, and so I banked up a few of them the other day, so I actually got to listen to Braden and Simone talk for almost 2 hours.
So. I'm sorry to hear that, Dave.
So Braden is here to talk to us about all things stocks. So Braden, thank you again for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time to come talk to us. So tell us what's going on. Tell us what's been exciting you or churning you're excited about stuff.
Well, Dave, Andrew, I always love coming on this show. And I'm not just saying that, you know, you go on a podcast and you're like, thanks for having me on, like the kind of cookie cutter thing. No, I really mean it. You and I have been doing this for a long time now, and it's always fun. Nice chatting with you guys. And thanks for saying that about the show. I really appreciate that. What's been exciting me recently is how the stock market keeps going up and up and up. Have you guys noticed that? Like it's been, it's crazy. It
very
just keeps
funny.
Going higher and higher.
your screen's upside down, right? Your monitor is one of those new ones that has a hook and it, I think your screen got turned upside down.
It's curved, so like it kind of gives this nice portrayal. You know what? What's been exciting? Just working on new projects. You know, the engineer in me likes building things that people use and find valuable. So my best effort into doing that is giving people the best financial data they can find on the internet. And we're going to talk later about like specific metrics that really move the needle for these public companies that I think are more important to focus on now than ever, given stocks keep falling. And, you know, in a bear market, it really tests your conviction day in and day out. Like, and you keep adding to your portfolio and, you know, it just keeps grinding sideways or lower. While this is completely normal in bear markets, both professionals and retail do-it-yourself investors can't be immune to how that feels. And it really continues to test your conviction all the way down until you find a complete mode of desperation where the scale has gone from extreme greed to extreme fear. And then eventually the market finds a bottom there. but it tests your conviction until it does so. And I think that investors are feeling that today, and they're going to feel it again sometime in the future, because bear markets happen. You know, you can, a broken clock's right twice a day, and you can just keep saying that the bear markets are going to happen more and more, you know, and again and again. And that's because they do. And it is so normal. It is so healthy. It is part of the economy. There's expansion and contraction. Over the long term, though, investors do quite well.
So talk to us about, we talked a little bit about this off air, but for whatever reason, you know, you have the big companies in the stock market, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, and then you have Netflix. And Netflix, for whatever reason, I guess Facebook too would be also in that camp, but Netflix has taken the beating multiples compared to a lot of other stocks. So what have you seen there? And what is the explanation for why a stock like that got hit so much more than the others? Because they're all big and they're all tech. So yeah. What's going on?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. And investors have to keep asking themselves, like, is this a bear market with a reason why my tech stocks are down 70%? Like, Netflix today is down over 70% from its peak in October of last year, which is dramatic for a company, you know, that was once worth hundreds of billions in market cap. Like, we're talking about one of the largest companies in the world. And so today, you know, that's 84 and change in market cap and erased almost all of its 5-year gains. Now, mind you, even after this, what looks like falling off a cliff, investors have done exceptionally well if they've held the stock, you know, since people first heard about the service. And so just paying attention to that kind of thing matters. But back to your question, is they grew revenue on their latest quarter almost 10% year over year. And on the surface, you go, how on earth does that warrant the stock to drop 36% in its trading day after releasing earnings at the close? And that is a legitimate question. Like, how is that possible? Is this, you know, is it because, you know, the market is in extreme fear? You know, every company who reports earnings is going down, but why is Netflix getting absolutely decimated? They grew revenue almost double digits. And the reason for that is they had, for the first time ever, net churn of subscribers. Not like growth is slowing or anything like that, which is probably true as they reach, like, you know, somewhat maturity, but actual net churn, more cancellations than new ads. And that is like a disaster for SaaS companies and for subscription based companies. Like, net churn, like, makes me, like, feel sick as a technology entrepreneur. Like, that sounds terrible. It's like the end of, like, your company's falling apart, right? And that's not true for Netflix's situation, but what is true is that for the first time they faced net churn. And if you look at the top line growth of 10% and for the first time ever net churn, it brings you to the most important point, which is these key company, key performance indicators are what usually drives the business fundamentals behind the scenes. And that'll come out in GAAP accounting, of course. It'll come out, but you know, I'm raising money for my company right now and doing venture capital meetings all the time. And they don't ask, well, I mean, of course, they're asking me what the revenues are, but they're asking important questions like, how many API calls a day? How many monthly active users? You know, like, when someone comes on, like, how sticky is it? Like, are they using it? Like, are they power users? These types of actual key performance indicators. How many searches are being done on the platform a day? These are what are actually important and we track internally. And so on the top of every press release of each company, when they report earnings, usually above revenue, before profits, are the metrics that matter. Like, Spotify is a perfect example. You might be listening to this podcast on Spotify. At the top of the press release, Daniel Ek doesn't say, here's our revenue. Daniel Ek says, here's the premium subscribers. Here's the freemium subscribers. Here is it is in total. Here is how it's trending. Here's where we think it can go. This is where it was last year. In a table before profit, free cash flow, all that GAAP accounting stuff. And so, I've just been on a mission to try to build out this database of all these key performance indicators, because I think that they matter. And I think that they're hard to find in aggregate for these publicly traded companies.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I pay for vacations with whatever was in my wallet, but I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card worth more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Budgeting was always a challenge for me. I struggled to find the best way to keep track of all of my money, not to mention all the time tracking down receipts, cataloging expenses, and trying to figure out what went wrong with my air quote system until Monarch Money. Monarch Money allowed me to easily see what is going on with my finances, helping me get a better handle on my spending, budgets, and more. It's my go-to app every day, more so than my bank, because I can quickly see where I am with my budgets and spending, allowing me to invest more and spend time on the things that I want to do. It's my GPS for money. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all of your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, set goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/beginners. Unlike other personal finance apps, Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it so easy to set up, customize, and use. Monarch has built-in features to collaborate with your partner, family, or financial advisor. Invite them to your account at no extra cost, and they'll get their own login info and a joint view of all of your finances. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. Change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications, set up automatic rules for transactions and notifications, and more. In fact, Monarch Money is one of the first to bring you direct Apple Card, Apple Cash, and savings syncing with the latest iOS 17.4 update. Now you can sync your wallet directly for seamless budgeting. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's a top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/beginners. That's monarchmoney.com/beginners for your extended 30-day free trial.
They are hard to find, and it's cool to see resources like yours popping up, because I know for me personally, I do this full-time. So I invest quite a bit in different tools and databases to save time, so I don't have to hire people to go through the databases for me. And so those tools have not been available for all that long. And so to have a platform like yours to have a lot of functionality at a good value for retail do-it-yourself investors, I think that's very, very cool. I mean, to give an example, you know, you mentioned Netflix with their net churn. A lot of times when I'm looking at different companies, I will want to compare different metrics that the companies also, it might not be at the top of the press release, but they will be if you go down and you look, and it's not to say it's buried, but it takes some work to get there, right? So like if you're looking at retailers, you're looking at same store sales. If you're looking at restaurants, same restaurant sales, and you compare how a company is doing in those key metrics compared to their competitors, and you can sometimes see where a company is the leader in their field when you have apples to apples comparisons with other companies. And that doesn't always show up in the financials. Like you said, revenue or profits doesn't always show up year to year because there's so many moving pieces, but some KPIs can be so important. What's hard about it is it's different for every business, and what we think that's is true. A KPI doesn't always mean is a driver, but that doesn't mean you don't ignore them, right? You have to certainly look and see what are the KPIs and how can I use them to make better investing decisions.
Yeah, it drives a lot of valuable insight. And like you said, there's some, the ones that will be buried, one that we really like, which sits on like page 186 of Amazon's 10K, is their warehouse square footage. So this tells a really interesting story, right? Their footprint in terms of like real infrastructure has exploded to over 600 million square feet of warehousing space. And so it's on page literally like 186, I think it is, on their 10K, on their latest one. And we think that that's a really interesting story to track because it speaks to their competitive advantage, which is this distribution and infrastructure competitive advantage. All the other metrics, like how do you really quantify that story, right? Without talking about something like, you know, well, look, they have 600 million freaking square feet of warehouse storage. Like, how do you compete with that? Like, look at the CapEx spend on that. Like, it drives a moat itself, like in CapEx spend, as much as we love like asset light compounders. I mean, it's a real thing. It's hard to replicate. Yeah. And so I think like bringing it back to, you know, this is the Investing for Beginners podcast. A lot of new investors will look out there and you are so blessed. And this is not like a promo of my own product. Like you're so blessed from a fee perspective, a reduced friction perspective, a data accessibility perspective to get this stuff that is so, like used to be so hard to find. Dude, completing a trade like 10, 20 years ago was impossibly hard. Like the friction has dropped off a cliff. It is a wonderful time to start being an investor, to be an investor today, especially if you can get prices at, you know, compressed prices like they are today. I'm just very optimistic about the future, and I'm very optimistic for people who are just getting started because the education, the information, the fee structure, the cost, the ability to get started, the ability to connect your entire financial life, it's just so much better than it was even just 5 years ago. I just think it's wonderful.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. You know, when it comes to magic pills, I'm always skeptical, whether you're talking about somebody who thinks value investing is the only way or Bitcoin is the only way. What are some ways to make sure that we're not putting too much reliance on a KPI and putting it, how do you put KPIs in context with an overall stock picking approach?
I just think it's part of the process, right? Like I'm talking about it right now because I'm literally all consumed by building this out right now. But of course, it's just part of the process and part of the thing to verify. And you know what? I think that the most value in it is tracking, right? Like for me, this is how I track my positions. I have like just three, sometimes even just one metric that I track for the 17 individual equities that I own. Today, I own 17 individual equities and I track just those specific ones. And so bringing it back to the Spotify example, it's just subscribers. And that really helps you simplify your process, especially if you own a lot of names. Like I know a lot of people own tons of names. I'd probably just index if that was me, but a lot of people own lots of names and to start tracking it. But back to your question around like, it's not the only thing to look at. Of course, like you'll get blindsided if you're only looking at one metric. It's the same with any, if you're looking at just one valuation metric. Like if you're like only looking at price to earnings, you're going to miss a lot of stuff. Or if you're only buying companies with a PE less than 15, because Ben Graham's The Intelligent Investor, the Bible of value investing, told me to do so. Well, you've just been underweight good companies. You've underperformed the market and underweight quality and underweight pricing power, basically is how I would put it. And so there's just really no right or wrong way to do it. What I will say I'm quite confident in is the right way to do it is to think long term, buy great companies, think like a business owner, not a trader. I've still never been convinced that anyone can trade profitably for it like more than 10 years straight. I've been doing this for so long and I have never once been convinced trading is a profitable endeavor. And sure, you know, someone's listening to this like, dude, I doubled my money on some stock yesterday. Like, you idiot. If you do it for 10 years straight and you can prove to me, I'm all ears. I'm seriously all ears. I'm an open book. I love being convinced wrong of my own biases. I actually mean that, but I have yet to be convinced that other than buying great assets, whether it's the entire index or individual securities and holding on for a long term and compounding, is truly the best way to make money in the stock market. And I'm not just saying that like to be all stoic, like don't trade, you know, like some old guy. I'm saying this because I think that's how you actually make a life-changing wealth. And I truly believe it.
Yeah.
What's the best way to get started in the market? Download Andrew's ebook for free at stockmarketpdf.com.
Totally agree. I think the thing that I love about what you're building there and how much it helps is when you kind of combine the analysis of the financials with the KPIs, it gives you a better sense of the actual business.
That's right.
And, you know, a perfect example is if you look at Visa. Well, of course, we can't have Braden on and not talk about Visa.
What would not be an episode of me on the IFB podcast unless we talked about the payment rails. Visa.
Yeah. And but the thing is, if you look at Visa, and if you just look at the revenues, you may be a little bit underwhelmed, or you may even go, ew, you know, it's not doing so great. But then if you look at, you know, the KPI of the cross-border payments, which is so huge to their business and their profitability, and you don't understand that those are actually increasing faster than the revenues are, that you'll start to understand, okay, this is how Visa operates. This is what really impacted them during the pandemic, and this is how they're rebounding from the pandemic. It's also an illustration of the strength or weakness of the economy, because so many people are using Visa and MasterCard to make payments, buying groceries, buying food, some cases paying rent, buying gas, not as much here right now. But anyway, those are all indicators of bigger issues and bigger things that you can look into, and it can give you comparisons of how the company's doing, how it could be doing. And, you know, that to me, I think is really beneficial for retail investors, whether they're retail or whether they're institutional investors, to have access to that information. And like you said, sometimes they don't make it the easiest to find. Visa does first to a certain extent, but there are companies out there like Amazon that will hide things and make it harder to find.
Totally. And if you look at, like, I'm just on here right now, I just typed in V on the platform and got their total transactions. I mean, total transaction volume for this company has went from 6.3 trillion to almost 14 trillion in the past 10 years in terms of total transaction volume on the Visa network. Like, it's unbelievable. Like, trying to get context for that level of scale is unbelievable. And of course, they're taking just a tiny take rate, like, you know, less than like 0.14%. It's kind of like a death by a million paper cuts type business model. But on that tiny take rate, we're talking about like what, like 70% EBITDA margins? It's so stupid. Like, it's silly good. And so these are the types of things that get me interested in terms of like trying to own the best businesses in the world. And these are the types of things that tell that story. Because if you're just looking at GAAP metrics and you say, wow, this thing's growing really well over time, like, it's pretty surface level. You don't understand their moat, their competitive advantages, the durability, what drives that in the background. And so I think that all of those things make this game more fun. As a business, like, someone who studies businesses, like, even if I was fully indexed, which I think is a great option for beginner investors, even if I just was, like, this stuff excites me. Right? Like, this stuff makes nerds like you and I excited, focusing on these kinds of things, understanding business models. And maybe you take some of that and some of that information and build your own business with it, or your own side business with it. This is what gets me really excited in the world today.
I think the other thing that I like about it too is when you're looking at businesses and you want to compare Shopify to Amazon, if you just look at the GAAP financials, sometimes those relationships are hard to see really where somebody may be eating into another person's, you know, market share or not. And so by looking at like gross merchant value, or I'm not super familiar with those companies, but I understand enough about how the businesses work that if I wanted to look at those and see who was growing faster, how they're growing, and all those things, those will all relate to the financials and the business model, and will help illustrate in greater detail whether the company does have a moat, whether the moat is eroding, and maybe some potential things that you could see coming in the future that could help you maybe get out of a position or think about whether this is, you know, going to be viable for the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, that's a perfect example. It's like, you know, a lot of e-commerce companies publish that GMV number you just talked about. And it does help give people context. I mean, you have to factor in take rates and margins and figure all that stuff out. Like, is it a marketplace or is it like, you know, fee-based transaction, like that kind of stuff. Those are questions that we can figure out later, but it really helps us gain context of scale right out of the gate. Like, how much are people actually moving? Or let's look at another e-commerce company like Etsy. Okay. There's one comp, I don't own it, but my co-host on my podcast does, and he's owned it for a while. He noticed, right? He's made lots of money on it. He's known that noticed, like, my wife really likes this interplay at marketplace. And let me check it out. And he's like, wow, it's actually a really cool company. And by the way, lots of good ideas come from just like paying attention in your own life. That's like the old Peter Lynch thing, like channel checks, going to the mall and see what people are spending their money on, like classic stuff like that. And you look at that, and the most important metric to track is, in my opinion, I'm not a shareholder, in my opinion, is active sellers on the platform. Because that will show the health of the ecosystem of people selling on their marketplace. Like, if sellers are churning off because they're not making enough money, if they start an Etsy shop and like, I'm going to start selling, you know, necklaces or some other crafty good. And like, I've been doing this for a couple months and I've sold nothing and I'm no longer an active seller. That, in my opinion, defines the health of the ecosystem of the marketplace better than active buyers, in my opinion, because these are people that matter. It's like an Airbnb example. How many hosts are on the platform? Is that host number going up or down? Are hosts churning off to go to VRBO, their competitor, or like doing direct listing on like making their own website and doing direct listing? You know, maybe the economics are better. Maybe they don't have to deal with Airbnb. That defines the health of the ecosystem, in my opinion, more so than anything else. And so I think tracking those things matter. And it may only be one thing that you can implement this into your portfolio where, you know, say you do own Airbnb. It's tracking gross booking value just over time, or tracking active hosts on the platform, nights booked, or maybe you're really excited about the trend of people living on Airbnb. Over time, the amount, the nights booked in an Airbnb continues to trend up because people are like, screw it. I'm living in Costa Rica remotely and working remotely for 3 months, and I'm booking this Airbnb for 3 months at a time. This has massively skewed the average number of nights booked on the platform. Interesting trend. Like, not only as an investor, but like, this is a real thing that's happening. People are living on Airbnb. People are doing this whole remote live from anywhere type thing. And so maybe there's some other interesting takeaways there. And I don't know. I just think it's cool.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator.
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you. Now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Lincoln County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day, you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily wherever you cast your pod.
If you're talking to like beginner who wants to be a DIY investor, there's so many KPIs. Like, where do you even start?
Well, again, it's so nuanced depending on the business. It's not like a necessarily good place to start for trying to find ideas, but it's a good place to do more research on the company. Like, say you're already interested in Airbnb as an investment, and then going onto the platform, typing in Airbnb, and then I don't think it's a great place to start per se, but it's a good place to verify your investing thesis and do more and continue to monitor it over time, as well as just regular sales are, right? Like, I have a rule for my investing framework that I don't buy companies that don't have growing revenues. It's like a simple rule, right? And that's going to be on any GAAP accounting statement. You can find that information anywhere. It's just like so simple. It goes back to these like very simple questions that you have to ask yourself. Like, do I think this company is going to be bigger, better, more profitable in the future? If not, like, I wouldn't own it for 10 seconds, right? Like, in 10 years, like, is it going to be better, bigger, more profitable, more defensible, more durable, more market share? in 10 years. And if not, I'm not interested. Right, like move on, right? Like it's pretty quick for me. I think a lot of people get caught up in low value, like they got caught up in value traps. Next thing you know, they're buying some 10% dividend yielding co that saw 15% decline in their sales in the past 12 months. I think that's a quick way to go broke.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I guess something that I think is kind of interesting about what you're saying is, I think it goes back to just kind of understanding what it is you're buying. And it also is understanding what your goals are and what you're trying to do. And I think having like that simple checklist, you know, especially for a beginner, having a simple checklist like that will help people understand what it is they need to look at for the different companies so that they can get a better sense of what it is they're going to be buying. Because again, when they buy a company, they're buying a piece of the company. They're not just buying a ticker on whatever their investment platform is. It's actually a company that they're buying. You know, beginners, I think understanding some of those simple ideas and then looking at what the company is telling you a lot of times will reveal what those KPIs are, whether it's the earnings calls, whether it's the press releases, whether it's at the top of their financial forms. A lot of those times, or even if you hear the talking head go on CNBC, the things that they're going to focus on are the things that are going to be important to the company. And those are things that you can take back and look at and see how those can impact your investment.
It is the best way to focus on real signal versus noise. Because if you look out there today in financial media, financial news, the internet, you know, your watch list, you see tickers going up and down for each reason. You get some notification. Oh, the worst thing ever. You get some notification on your brokerage that a stock you own is trading at high volume or like down 5%+ in the day, which happens all the time. I mean, come on, it's a bear market. That is so much noise and can really take away from people focusing on fundamentals, especially if you're new to the market, especially if you're new to the market. If you're brand new to the market and the stock you own goes down, which is very normal, happens all the time, you will be tricked. You're going to be tricked into thinking that there's some new development you don't know about. This is one of the biggest scams of daily mark-to-mark pricing of assets on a market as liquid as the stock market. The stock market being liquid and being able to share, like exchange shares, like, you know, I can go out there and buy shares, sell shares like in an instant, is amazing. It's like one of the best things. Like it's just pure brilliance, really. It is. But it comes with a scam of people thinking that every day there's something to pay attention to in terms of each single equity moving around. When each company really reports their results on a quarterly basis, maybe they do some update on guidance here and there. Maybe they have some investor day. But other than that, like, what else is there, right? Like, there's some news, you know, some company does this, some company does that. Sure, those might be important. But day-to-day movement on stocks with no real relevant fundamental change in the company is a real illusion to tracking what matters. And so as soon as you can recognize that, I think you'll do a lot better in terms of being an investor, because that is like one of the biggest mistakes I see right out of the gate is like, there's, you know, I'm new to this. There's no way I'm smart enough to the people who are selling this stock. They must know something I don't. I'm out. And I think that that's a bad way to go. If you think like a business owner and not like trading some imaginary tickers, it'll help you a lot.
So why do you think a company like Facebook is so unloved right now? Because I think it, you know, all the things that you were just talking about, if you took the F, if you blocked out the Facebook part of it and just looked at the financials of the company, almost every investor will go, I want that.
Yeah, especially at the valuation, right? Like,
yeah, right. You just all those things, but then you put that the Meta or Facebook on there and you put Mark Zuckerberg
in there. It's icky, right?
And it becomes icky. So why is that?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a wonderful question, because if you're to like run a model on like growth at a reasonable price, I think you might get maybe the best looking company I've ever seen in terms of my entire career of like EV to EBITDA versus EBITDA growth. Like, when are you ever going to see this giant disparity? I don't think in my entire career I've seen anything quite like it. And you're right. It's such an icky thing to own. You know, some people have their thoughts about the Zuck. You know, he's still a founder-led business, which, by the way, I'm a big fan of. Not necessarily him, but I'm a big fan of founder-led businesses. I actually think he's okay. People hate on him. I think he's all right. Facebook is in a weird situation right now. Or sorry, Meta. Like, correction, Meta. Meta is in a situation right now, I believe, that hundreds of business books are going to be written about. It is a pivotal point in the company where, no pun intended, they are pivoting in terms of their messaging, things that they're focusing on. You know, you wonder as an investor, you're like, okay, this thing's still run by the founder. He has no real financial motivation anymore. The guy's worth over $100 billion. Well, maybe not anymore, but, and you're like, is this ADHD killing the company? Like, should they focus on what they're good at? Or is this really Zuckerberg brilliance focusing on this next computing platform in Oculus? And it's just such a hard question to answer that no one has the answer to. And you know what investors hate? When they don't have the answers. Investors hate uncertainty. They hate not knowing the answers. And that's why you've seen complete destruction in the multiple. Even though, I mean, yeah, I mean, you look at daily active users on Instagram and Facebook and everything looks fine. Everything looks good. You know, you look at the top 10 most downloaded apps on the App Store, a lot of Meta assets, and you have this like completely unmonetized WhatsApp, like the most used messaging app platform in the world. Like, from a daily active user's perspective, people are just glued to this stuff. Like, it's unbelievable. And then you look at it and you're like, is this metaverse thing going to pay off? Because it's no longer what I think I was wrong about is just some distraction. If you look at the Oculus Reality Lab spending, which is a KPI we track, it is in the tens of billions of dollars each quarter. So if that doesn't work, we are talking about one of the greatest capital incinerations I've ever seen. You see what I mean?
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, so we are talking about a pivotal point in the company that hundreds of business books will be written about as the greatest move of all time, or a complete destruction of a $1 trillion asset. And I don't know which way it's going to go. But we're definitely watching this Oculus spending over time. And I think that it's become divisive for investors who currently own the company. They're like, dude, we just want you guys to keep making these addictive advertising platforms. Right? Like, right. It's just questions to be answered. That's the main thing.
I think all that is super interesting. Andrew, do you have something you wanted to? Yeah.
So, Braden, you've got these KPIs that we've been discussing today. It is a feature in your platform, stratosphere.io. You guys also cover some of the biggest businesses. I know you have scores for quality, growth, value, and then obviously the KPIs too. So tell us a little bit about all of that. And when people first go on the site, what's like the ideal way that you would tell them to navigate it if they haven't used the site for the first time?
Yeah, thanks for the, if you go to stratosphere.io and you don't even have to make an account, you should, you're going to unlock everything. It's free, but you can, seeing is believing, right? Like, in 5 seconds, you can perform a search of some company you own, are interested in, and get all 10 years of financial statements. If it's a large cap company, we're going to have all their key performance indicators. We're going to have the entire S&P 500 by the end of August, which is the promise that I've kept strong with. And we are ahead of schedule. So this is good. And you're going to go from knowing nothing to everything about the company, I think, pretty quick. And so I'm trying to make the process easier for professionals, people who are new to this, and someone in between, all ranges of the spectrum, to make fundamental research easier, because it has been, people have been tricked into thinking that you have to be a professional to do this. People have been tricked into thinking that they have to pay expensive management fees to do this. And I don't believe that all of that is true, with the caveat that you are actually buying companies, holding them, and not gambling in the stock market, because the stock market is not a gambling machine. Sure, you can make money on it, trade and stuff, in and out. But I truly believe that the life-changing wealth is made by holding great companies for a long time. And so we want to make that easier for people. And so that's basically what it is. You do a search, you can navigate through the different tabs. I'm very biased, but I think that the UX and the UI is quite beautiful. I'm really happy with how it all looks and feels.
That's really cool. So, you know, obviously can't argue with that idea. You got to buy good companies. You got to hold them. And that's how you're going to build wealth. Let the companies do the work for you after you've laid some groundwork in. So Braden, it's been great to have you on all of this time. I know you're a super hard worker and you're really passionate about technology, and it's cool to see another platform out there that can really bring a lot of value to people. And I mean, if it's free, what you got to lose, at least check it out, right? So people, again, can go to stratosphere.io. They can also listen to your podcast. Where else can they find out more about you online?
Yeah, for those Canadians or from Canada, obviously. If you're not, even if you're not from Canada, I think the podcast is at least somewhat interesting. For some reason, Dave listens to it for hours on end while he's driving. I'm very sorry to hear that. I couldn't listen to my voice for that long.
It's really seamless. That's what I'm
listening to. Yeah, I co-host the show there. It's episodes come out on Mondays and Thursdays. It's called The Canadian Investor. We talk about stuff like this, news, all kinds of fun stuff. We try to keep it fun. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's all awesome stuff. And as a frequent flyer on the platform as well as the podcast, it's definitely worth your time to check out. And there's a lot of great information there that can help you learn more about the companies that you're trying to buy. And that's really the bottom line. And the KPI stuff is newer to the platform, but it's just
24 hours old to be yeah. Exact.
it's new, but I love it. It's super easy to use and it's very illustrative. And as a visual person, it helps me a lot to kind of visualize and see things. And I couldn't recommend it enough. So, Braden, again, thank you for taking your time out of your day, you know, to come talk to us. We do appreciate it. And everyone out there, go check out his website. Go check out the podcast. All right, folks. Well, with that, we'll wrap it up. Everyone, go out there, invest with a margin of safety. Emphasis on the safety. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you all next week.
We hope you enjoyed this content. 7 Steps to Understanding the Stock Market shows you precisely how to break down the numbers in an engaging and readable way with real-life examples. Get access today at stockmarketpdf.com. Until next time, have a prosperous day.
The information contained is for general information and educational purposes only. It is not intended for a substitute for legal, commercial, and/or financial advice from a licensed professional. Review our full disclaimer at einvestingforbeginners.com.